The Southeast syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. JP's on the board, by the way. JP, did you hear me say Southeast Regional?
I noticed the difference there.
I like it.
It has a nice ring to it.
It does have a nice ring to it. Yeah, for those who don't know, we are happy today to be the debut of Right Side Radio on 1150 AM WGOW News Talk out of Chattanooga. So all you Chattanoogans, welcome to the Right Side Ruffian team. We're glad to be with you, and we look forward to a long relationship with WGOW. So thank you all very much. JP, how you doing, man? It's Meatloaf Monday. We didn't even play the sound effect.
No, not yet. I can play right now if you want me to.
You know what? Meatloaf Monday. Hit it.
I think I'll try the meatloaf sandwich.
Do you know what that is?
Yes, meatloaf.
What is it? I'm only asking in case I have to describe it later to a doctor.
Look, it's nutritious. It's delicious.
Made out of meat. Add ketchup if you want. I couldn't care less.
Nice. All right. Meatloaf Monday. We're official now. We can move the show forward. So, yeah, for those of y'all in Chattanooga that aren't used to it, we got all kinds of things that you're going to get used to along the way, including an entire lexicon of words that are part of the Right Side vocabulary. So we'll get you squared up. Don't worry. JP, how was your weekend, brother?
It was good. It was a lot of football and sports watching. But, yeah, now I'm hungry with the meatloaf.
Did y'all have to do a show Saturday?
We did not do a show Saturday morning because the roads were still icy up in Athens, so nobody went up to the studio Saturday morning. But this upcoming weekend, we'll be doing a prelude to the national championship. So
oh no, you know they're doing the national championship on Inauguration Day.
I know.
Who thought that was a good idea?
I don't even know why they do it on Mondays in general. But
I don't either.
It's
like
a bad idea.
It just screws. That's a great Saturday game. You know what I'm saying?
I know.
All right, hey, listen, we got all kinds of stuff laid on for you today. Great show. Coming up at 3 o'clock today, U.S. Senator Katie Britt calling in. She'll be talking to us about what's going on with the Lake and Riley Act that she's a champion for right now in the Senate. The Lake and Riley Act passed the House, going to the Senate. She'll also talk to us about Senate confirmations for Trump's appointees. So I look forward to hearing what she's got to say. U.S. Senator Katie Britt calling in at 3 p.m. At 3:30, Congressman Gary Palmer calling in to talk about the fact that there's a Trump agenda right now that is still kind of in flux. Is the Trump agenda going to be in one big reconciliation bill, or is it going to be in multiple bills spread out over time? There's pros and cons to both. We'll talk to Congressman Gary Palmer at 3:30 to get the lowdown on that. And then we still got a triple dipper that's filled up with stuff. So hit it, man.
The triple dipper. Three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the Triple Dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show. So first out the gate, changing of the guard. Man, there are so many things happening in the first week. I mean, for the first week of the Trump administration, which, by the way, 7 days from today. But yeah, 7 days from today, it all really kicks in. Biden giving his last big foreign policy speech today, trying to tell us why everything's great and America's stronger now than it was when he took office. Right. Now, we got a whole new day coming starting next week, and we'll talk about the changing of the guard, number one, on the Triple Dipper. Number two, I got news, folks. The state legislatures for both Alabama and Tennessee are going into session here very soon. Tennessee tomorrow, I believe. So, yeah, we're going to cook up a batch of home fries as we take a look at some things that are happening right here in our own backyard, because we can focus on D.C. all day long, but what happens in your state capital more often than not winds up having more impact on your day-to-day life than what happens in D.C. So a batch of home fries getting cooked up is number two on the Triple Dipper. And then you know the deal. Every once in a while I'm getting the show ready, and I look at it and I think, my gosh, look at all the wokeness. How much woke can there be? All the wokeness is before me, and I realize what I've got to do is put together a vast charcuterie of wokeness, if you will, a plethora, a buffet of wokeness. And we have to do a round of Adventures in Woke World. That'll be number three in the Triple Dipper, to include, by the way, an update on lab-grown meat. Yay. All right, let me jump on into the Right Side Way opening monologue, and I'll just remind you guys, every single day, the Right Side Way monologue is brought to you by attorney Stan McDonald. Stan McDonald, out of Huntsville, a partner at the law firm of Wilmer & Lee, is the sponsor of the Right Side Way, and I will give you more on Stan McDonald here in a little bit. So 1 week from today, folks, 1 week from today, we get to find out. We get to find out if freedom is back on the menu. So Donald Trump and his second administration come back into office next Monday. And some of the old players are there and a host of new ones. And I'll be honest, this one feels far more mission-oriented. We will get to watch and hope and experience what happens when all the campaign rhetoric, the social media postings, the interviews, the rallies, all come together to become actual actions. So yeah, we get to watch as the effort gets underway to right the ship of state. And it's going to be something to see. And to be honest, there's nowhere to go but up. Freedom took a beating these past few years. Think about that. It's hard to believe that in just 4 years, we saw COVID lockdowns, vaccine mandates, 40-year inflation highs, 40-year military recruiting lows, economic crashes, government spending billions to make the private sector less private, lawfare, January 6th commission, the rise of the transgender agenda, DEI, ESG, BLM riots, embarrassment on the world stage, war in the Middle East, all of that in just 4 years. I'm not sure I even scratched the surface. But my sincere hope, though, is that the new Trump administration will take everything back in spades, and that once again, all things will start and end with freedom as the goal. Because the only way to end with freedom is to start with freedom. So yeah, I'm a conservative. I say it every day on the show multiple times, that we're solid conservative and just plain right. What is that? A what? You heard me, a conservative. What's that mean? Does that mean I vote Republican? Well, it's way more than that. The bottom line is that if the Democrat Party was the one that stood for things like smaller government or less spending or lower taxes or traditional values or constitutional rights or strong national defense or the rule of law, if the Democrats stood for all that, I'd be a Democrat. But they don't. But if you just heard me there, you will have caught on to the fact that I believe that being a conservative is way more than just a party. It's way more than a vote. It's about principle. So my goal in doing this show every single day has always been that each one of you listening find yourself educated, empowered, enlightened, entertained, able to walk away from any given show and have those conversations about life that you are then even more ready for. Able to not only believe what you believe, but also to explain it. Because it's really common to have a true belief that is rooted deep in your core, like the fact that you know you're a conservative. The trick comes in knowing how to put it to words. How to express it in a way that makes sense. How do you describe what you know you believe in a way that you can just say it off the cuff, at the drop of a hat, and have it make sense to others? I mean, really, y'all, it's not enough to just think or say, I'm a conservative, and then shake our fists in the air. We have to be able to give an adequate explanation. So yes, I'm a conservative for things like I believe in living in government and the strict construction of our U.S. Constitution. And fiscal conservatism in the form of lower taxation and government spending and all those things. But today I'm going to spend some time unpacking what I believe a conservative position ought to be on the question of freedom. Real freedom. The very basis for who we are as a nation. I've been to places who didn't have what we have, where freedom was just a notion, like an idea. In the beginning of the war in Afghanistan, an Afghan farmer told me once that for years the Taliban were in charge and it did not rain, he said. But then the Americans came and it rained. He was equating us with better life. I saw Iraqi men in Baghdad who put their lives on the line just for the effort to be elected officials trying to bring freedom to their country. And they were heroes in my book. Men who simply wanted freedom for their people, something they knew very little about because they never had it. Look, the concept or notion of freedom is what makes America unique in the history of the world. It's part of the actual character of our nation, intended that way by the founders who embedded in our founding documents that in order to form a more perfect union that we should secure the blessings of liberty. I saw a clip once of an MSNBC commentator who opined that Americans have a long history of just being too freedom-obsessed. He obviously missed the whole point. We're not a nation of individuals, some of whom are obsessed with freedom. We're a nation because of freedom. Because of freedom. Freedom is both instinctual and intentional. It is not just who we are as a nation, it is why we are as a nation. Any and all decisions that are made by government which have the potential to limit the daily activities of citizens of this great nation, it must be reviewed and voted on from the starting point of freedom first, and measured against the guarantees of freedom enumerated in our Constitution. I mean, to be sure, there are always restrictions on personal liberty, restrictions on freedoms, like, you know, part of life. We cannot commit murder. We cannot steal property. Soldiers can be drafted into war, providing for the common defense. measured against the Constitution, those kinds of things could withstand constitutional scrutiny. But not every attempt to curtail personal liberties by government makes sense. Not every good idea by a local school board or a mayor's office or a governor or a president can withstand constitutional scrutiny. They overreach all the time. Abraham Lincoln once said, "We the people are the rightful masters of both Congress and the courts, not to overthrow the Constitution, but to overthrow the men who would pervert the Constitution." Lincoln also famously said once, "America will never be destroyed from the outside. If we falter and lose our freedoms, it'll be because we destroyed ourselves." Now, why is that so important? Well, go ask anyone who's ever lived under tyranny. There's a lot of them here. They came here to escape, to come to a place that puts value on individual opinions, the right to assemble, the right to speak, the right to own property. You ask them what they left behind. Ask the people who came to the U.S. in the Mariel boat lift from Cuba to escape a dictatorship. Ask those who escaped the Khmer Rouge killing fields in Cambodia. Or go read one of my favorite books called Escape from Camp 14 about life in North Korea. So yeah, I'm a conservative because I place a value on freedom. I could leave this country anytime I wanted to, but I place value on the concepts that all men are created equal. I have more than once pledged myself to uphold and defend the Constitution of these United States. I'm a conservative because I believe that not every neat idea that government has to cure some ill or force some issue or change some aspect of daily living is a good idea. And I feel that way because of freedom. I also believe that I'm a conservative because I have the freedom to fail. I have the freedom to live and to try, to sweat and to toil, to dream and to forge those dreams, to expend every ounce of who I am and what I have, and to know what it means to fail and still know that it's not the end, because I have the actual freedom to try. I'm a conservative because I believe that freedom is worth fighting for, speaking out for, acting for, defending at every turn against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And I'm a conservative because I believe if we give up a little bit of freedom without questioning why, that we have in fact disallowed apathy to override responsibility. You've heard the speech from Braveheart, and yes, I'm going to go there for a second because it's true. It's a great line. William Wallace's character in the movie Braveheart asked his fellow Scotsman, "What would you do without freedom? Will you fight?" And one man replied, "Fight? Against that?" He said, "No, we'll run and we'll live." And Wallace looked at him and said, "Aye, fight and you may die. Run and you'll live, at least a while. And dying in your beds many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom?" So I am a conservative. This show stands for conservatism. And not just for freedom, but because of freedom. And next week, a new administration gets sworn in to work alongside a new Congress and a new Senate. And we have an opportunity here, and we can't blow it. But to make it all work, the new team in D.C. needs to always start with freedom so that we can end up with freedom. And that's a wrap for The Right Side Way. Well, there you have it. If that ain't red meat, I don't know what is. But man, I'm telling you right now, that is why we exist. This nation is not founded for the purposes of freedom. It was founded because of freedoms, and then freedoms are what helps it maintain. I'm just telling you, folks, it is absolutely something that the rest of the world looks at in awe. And too often we take it for granted. And next week, I'm looking forward to kick back in a big way. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just making common sense like a superpower. Hey, by the way, I told you a minute ago, Stan McDonald is the sponsor of the Right Side Way monologue every single day. Let me tell you about Stan. I've known him for a long time. Stan is amazing. So attorney Stan McDonald, partner at the law firm of Wilmer and Lee, he's a 30-year veteran in the practice of law in North Alabama. And not only will Stan advocate and fight for your legal needs and rights, but he has been an absolute warrior on the issues that our Right Side Ruffian community cares about. So attorney Stan McDonald, he has represented his clients in literally thousands of real estate transactions over the years. He knows how to represent you in like every version of state courts and local courts and federal courts. So when Stan McDonald's on your side, I like to say you'll have no greater friend and your adversaries will have no greater foe. So if you want to get in touch with him, here's how you do it. Attorney Stan McDonald at the law firm of Wilmer and Lee. He's an America First family man, a great attorney. His number is 256-479-3020. That's Stan McDonald, 256-479-3020. All right, now I got to do that ridiculous disclaimer. You ready? No representation made the quality legal service be informed greater than the quality legal service informed by other lawyers. Did I do that right?
That was a good one.
Oh, good. Okay, good. That's still, I've been practicing law myself for 20 years. I just can't imagine that we have to say every time, well, you know, nobody's any better than I am, or I'm not any better than they are, and, you know, we're all just not equal, because we're not. I like to think that I'm just, you know, able to say, well, I'm better than that guy over there. And occasionally I'm right. All right, hey, we got text messages going. Listen, all you folks in Chattanooga, welcome to the fold. Right Side Ruffians is what we call our folks, and the Right Side Ruffians text in here all the time. So if you want to join in, here's the deal. The number is 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. You can text it or call it. Same number for both. 833-68-RIGHT. Got a bunch of text messages already, man. We'll get to some of those after the break. But Ken from Decatur says, hey, Phil, you can't use times now. Chattanooga's an hour ahead of you. I know. So it's 2 p.m. Central, 3 p.m. Eastern is when we kick off. Still the afternoon drive. Steve from Tennessee says, Sherman marched through Atlanta and burned it down. Joe Biden has marched through the U.S. and the whole world and set it on fire. 20 January is the Biden Emancipation Day. Thank God. Steve from Tennessee. Steve, I join you, brother. I feel that like in spades right now. Jeremy from Madison says, I think Patrick Henry said it best. Give me liberty or give me death. Yes, indeed. John from Huntsville says, Phil, spectacular monologue. Also, did you see? He does this every time. Bo Nix and the Denver Broncos play like Alabama did in the ReliaQuest Bowl against Michigan. But no worries, I'm still in first place in my King of Gen Z playoff bracket because JP didn't join. You didn't join?
It slipped my mind. My apologies, John.
He says, by the way, JP, I sent you a text to your show Saturday telling you to join my playoff bracket.
Yeah, nobody was there.
And nobody was there. And they were snowed out.
Yep.
All right, we got more texts. We got more stuff. We got the Triple Dipper kicking off here momentarily. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Man, covering down on some major ground across the southeast U.S. of A. I'm talking about Huntsville to Chattanooga, Tuscaloosa to Gadsden, big old patches of Georgia and Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. Yeah, we're excited to be with you. All you Huntsvillians, just forgive us. We're going to have to talk about things that Chattanoogans are going to get used to here because we just added them to the fold as of today. But, I mean, I don't even know where to begin.
Well, speaking of Chattanooga, first of all, is it Chattanoogans? Is that the correct term?
It is now.
Okay, well, we've deemed it the correct term. We should probably cue them in on where we're at on social media and stuff. And the fact that
we live
stream the show every day that they're probably not aware of. We stream it to YouTube, to Twitter, Right Side Media's Twitter, as well as Phil's personal Twitter, @SenPhilWilliams, S-E-N Phil Williams. If you want to go check it out on our website, rightsidemedia.org as well. But while you're there, we greatly appreciate it if you gave us a follow. That goes a long way.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
We post loads of content on our YouTube and Twitter and such throughout the week. So if you follow, you'll be getting content from us daily. So we'd greatly appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you want to be a part of the Right Side Daily Newsletter, we send those out. We got we got four separate video podcasts. We got a written op-ed that came out today. As a matter of fact, comes out every Monday and then spreads its way around about 18 different news outlets around the region. So Right Side Media is the parent company. Right Side Radio is just one part of it. But you can find out more at rightsidemedia.org, including live streaming the show. So you can see the inside of the amazing Right Side studio. All right. Hey, listen, let me get a few more text messages to keep up with those. Allie from Athens checks in, says, excellent, all caps, monologue, Colonel. You and I saw firsthand people who were willing to give it all to be free, and it changed us forever. That is indeed true, my sister. You are right. Brian from Huntsville says, freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. Ronnie, meaning Ronald Reagan, is a big reason that I'm a conservative, he says. He's also made my choice in Ohio State versus Notre Dame. The Gipper was the Newt Rockne story. Yes. Yeah, that's going to be, yeah. Jeff from Indiana says, Phil, you're a conservative because you're intelligent, have common sense and morals. Why, thank you, sir. I hope those are all true. These are things that constitute a modern society that is able to self-govern instead of being governed by fear and immoral people that take advantage of weak-minded people by giving them a perceived treat for doing what they want them to do and fear if they don't. Jeff from Indiana checking in with a major text. That's awesome. That's good stuff, man. All right, yeah, text it or call it as we go through the show. We read them out, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. All right, 7 days, y'all. And by the way, I noticed that Butters put up on the our daily newsletter, the Right Side Report that goes out every day. We've got a countdown clock going now for the inaugural.
I've noticed that too.
Which, by the way, I'm going to be there. I'm pretty stoked.
It is big doings.
The lovely Charlene and I are going to, this is like Ma and Pa Kent will go to the big city. I mean,
it's like a once in a lifetime opportunity.
It is.
Have you ever been to an inauguration before?
I have not.
Wow.
I mean, I worked at the Pentagon. I've been in D.C. many times. I have been a part of, you know, politics in a lot of ways, but I've never been to a presidential inaugural. So yeah, we got a ball we're going to. We got a couple of receptions we're going to. We got tickets to the Trump rally at the Capital One Arena on the Sunday, and then of course we got tickets to the inaugural itself on Monday, and then you know heading back here on Tuesday, and we'll sleep the following Saturday. But it's a generational opportunity, man. I mean, it really is.
This one in particular,
yeah.
Historical one.
Absolutely. Well, 7 days to a changing of the guard. The changing of the guard. I mean, I was watching today. Listen, I don't hold any ill will towards Biden, the man. I take it back. Okay, I don't hold ill will towards him. I think he's pitiful. How about that? I'm ready for him to be gone. I can't even stand watching him take the stand in the podium anymore. I'm so beyond his presidency that I've already checked out of his stuff. He did a speech today, by the way, stood up. I don't know if he made it through the part that I saw. He was like fumbling around in his pockets trying to find his notes, but he actually made the statement: compared to 4 years ago, America is stronger. During my presidency, I've increased America's power in every dimension. Who feeds him these lines? And does he really believe that, do you think? What do you think, JP? Does he believe that?
I don't know. He probably does. He's probably told this stuff by his staffers. He also made a tweet that went viral, him saying that he's leaving Trump with one of the greatest economies ever.
Oh, gosh.
You know, stuff like that. He's being told to say the stuff, but he's probably in a position where he thinks it's true. Yeah. Because he's being told nothing but that, you know, all the time by his staffers.
There was a scene. All right. This classic cult movie, Escape from New York. You ever seen it?
Mm-mm.
Oh my gosh. See, now this, every time we do this, you make me feel old.
Yeah.
All right, Escape from New York. And the main character is this guy named Snake Plissken. And he's like this former special operator with a big snake tattoo, you know, on his chest and stomach. And anyway, Snake Plissken, he's sent into New York's Manhattan Island, has been converted to just one massive prison. They just walled off Manhattan Island and just basically drop people in there and let them live. Good luck, fellas. And so it's chaos inside. It's more like San Francisco.
There you go. Yeah.
Okay. So they have Snake Plissken goes in trying to rescue the president because Air Force One crashed inside the wall. And he finally finds, apparently the president was wearing like a tracker wrist a bracelet, which it was filmed in like 1979. So the tracker thing is like the size of a small screen TV with, you know, these bright red digital numbers. Anyway, he finally finds, he has a device that helps him track down where that is. He finally gets there, and there's a over in the corner is a guy being beaten up who's wearing the bracelet. And he fights off the guy who's beating him up, and it turns out just an old hobo who's just sitting there, and he looks at him and he says, "I knew I was the president when I wore this bracelet. I knew I was the president. Yes, sir, I'm the president." And that's the way I feel Joe Biden is.
Yeah, it's bad.
"I knew I was president when they gave me the Oval Office. That's when I knew I was president." That's what it feels like.
Yeah. He also said in a speech that he'd, you know, bragging about what he's done at the border, and it's all, nobody believes what he's saying anymore. He's just, let him go on his way.
I just... Okay, I don't get it. So what's going to happen in the next few days? A lot is on tap. Trump gets sworn in next Monday. I've got one article. Let me look through my stack here real quick. He says he's coming in with upwards of 100 executive orders on day one. No kidding. Story here on Red State. Trump will be inaugurated as the nation's 47th president on January 20th. Reports indicate he plans to arrive at the Oval Office armed with over 100 executive orders dealing with border and energy security. He met with Republican senators Wednesday, talked about his plans, and some of the participants are revealing what he said. So one of those, Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, said that, yeah, Trump told us in our meeting, 100 executive orders to address these issues. Things that are going to be massive executive authorities on how to tackle the border, immigration. Social media post on Monday, Trump indicated he will also terminate many of Biden's executive orders. And so you look at that and go, what can the executive do without legislation? Well, there's quite a few things. Policy is set. Tariffs are put in place by the executive. I mean, he's already doing stuff. He's not even in office yet. But I look forward to Tom Homan just taking the reins of the border and just going, woo, and just like cracking the whip. But Trump also said, we're not going to accept anymore. Actually, this is Stephen Miller, his deputy chief of staff, said we're not going to accept anymore that the Defense Department doesn't have a right to help secure the border. I understand posse comitatus. I am an attorney, and I'm also, oh, by the way, for those who don't know, in Chattanooga, a retired 06, a colonel, with tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. I understand the use of U.S. troops on U.S. soil. I understand that. But in cases of national emergency, in the threat to life, limb, and property, the use of U.S. troops can be used. Think about it. There have been any number of times. I was out in Montana years ago for some training, and the 101st Airborne was sent out to help fight brush fires that were burning like two-thirds of the state. I can think to, you know, the desegregation of schools. When, you know, Governor Wallace stood in the door and then, you know, the National Guard gets called out. But then there was also federal troops that were called out in Arkansas because they didn't trust the governor to actually call out his National Guard to make sure that desegregation went well. All that to say, I do believe you're going to see some executive orders that will employ the U.S. military for things like deportation, border security, helping staff up secure checkpoints, the use of drones, surveillance systems, ISR capability, all of that I think is going to be available. And I think you're going to see it sooner than later. They don't have, and the Customs and Border Patrol can then be released to actually do their jobs as opposed to processing people. Hopefully too, we're going to have a lot fewer people to process. One of the other things happening in the next few days is the confirmations are already starting for his appointees. So the nominations that Trump has made for the appointments to his cabinet, those kick off as of tomorrow, I believe. Yeah, tomorrow. Got a piece here from Fox, Dateline today, actually. Republicans will begin holding confirmation hearings this week for more than a dozen of the high-profile administration picks for President-elect Trump's next term. So right now, what we know is that Pete Hegseth goes before the Senate Armed Services Committee tomorrow at 9:30. We're hearing he has the votes. That's good. He'd better. Senator Marco Rubio for Secretary of State, he'll be going before the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations tomorrow at 10 a.m. We've got the Kristi Noem, Governor Kristi Noem, is going to go before the Homeland Security Governmental Affairs Committee on Wednesday at 9 a.m. We got also Tuesday, tomorrow, Secretary of Veterans Affairs Doug Collins out of Georgia is going to be having his hearing. North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum is going to be Secretary of the Interior. He's got his on tomorrow, I believe. Pam Bondi for Attorney General. And John Ratcliffe for Central Intelligence Agency. And Russell Voigt for the Office of Management and Budget. And Sean Duffy for Secretary of Transportation. And Chris Wright for all of them. All of those have their hearings, their committee hearings on Wednesday. So the way the process works, if you don't know, is these confirmations have to go through a related committee in the U.S. Senate, which will vet them, and, you know, some will rail against them. I like the fact that Trump's nominees are already, they're already announced. We're not coming into the final days trying to figure out who he's going to appoint to this, that, or the other. And I guarantee you he's got a couple of backup plans, but for the most part, I think you're going to see the majority, if not all of these, get confirmed. So they will go through committee. The committee then reports out to the broader Senate. The Senate majority leader will then bring them to the floor for a confirmations vote. Democrats will have their say. They'll try and filibuster. They won't be able to. I think the majority of these are going to get passed mostly on a on a party line vote, and there'll be a few bipartisans. I mean, I have a hard time believing that, like, Pam Bondi is not going to be able to get bipartisan support. I mean, how many glass ceilings do they need from us before we can get bipartisan?
Yeah, it's but you're not going to get any bipartisan from any of the votes with Democrats. I mean, maybe some, but as a whole, you're going to see them, quote, making a stand. We're standing against Trump. We're not going to vote for any of you know. But also, I'll say I think it's fitting that Hegseth's the first one because it gives Republicans an opportunity to set the tone, because he was the most controversial and the most fought at, like, against nomination, even with some Republicans. So if Republicans can pass that one, which I think they will, I think that sets the tone from the Republican side of, you know, we're not going to do anything to get in Trump's way. Like, we're going to help him pass his agenda. So I hope the first one with Hegseth getting passed sets the tone for the rest.
I think I agree with that. And I think that also the other thing is, by setting them all this week and a lot of them at the same time, like, there's going to be committee hearings going on up and down the hallways, if you know what I'm saying, all at one time. That prevents the press from being able to capitalize on any one particular moment. And the press is going to be all spread out. At the same time, the liberal press. And at the same time, that also keeps the Democrats hopping. And they can't be grandstanding forever on one nominee holding up all the others by grandstanding over here. They're spread out. So, and they're all going on at the same time. So I think that's cool. Let's go ahead and take a break. We'll do it right now. We'll take a break. We'll come right back. I've got more on Dipper number one, the changing of the guard. And then don't forget, coming up top of the hour, U.S. Senator Katie Britt to talk about it more. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Absolutely. Well, 7 days to a changing of the guard. The changing of the guard. I mean, I was watching today. Listen, I don't hold any ill will towards Biden, the man. I take it back. Okay, I don't hold ill will towards him. I think he's pitiful. How about that? I'm ready for him to be gone. I can't even stand watching him take the stand in the podium anymore. I'm so beyond his presidency that I've already checked out of his stuff. He did a speech today, by the way. Stood up. I don't know if he made it through. The part that I saw, he was like fumbling around in his pockets trying to find his notes. But he actually made the statement, compared to 4 years ago, America is stronger. During my presidency, I've increased America's power in every dimension. Who feeds him these lines? And does he really believe that, do you think? What do you think, JP? Does he believe that?
I don't know. He probably does. He's probably told this stuff by his staffers. He also made a tweet that went viral, him saying that he's leaving Trump with one of the greatest economies ever.
Oh, gosh.
You know, stuff like that. He's being told to say the stuff, but he's probably in a position where he thinks it's true. Yeah. Because he's being told nothing but that, you know, all the time by his staffers.
There was a scene. All right. This classic cult movie, Escape from New York. You ever seen it?
Mm-mm.
Oh my gosh. See, now this, every time we do this, you make me feel old.
Yeah.
All right, Escape from New York. And the main character is this guy named Snake Plissken. And he's like this former special operator with a big snake tattoo, you know, on his chest and stomach. And anyway, Snake Plissken, he's sent into New York's Manhattan Island, has been converted to just one massive prison. They just walled off Manhattan Island and just basically drop people in there and let them live. Good luck, fellas. And so it's chaos inside. It's more like San Francisco.
There you go. Yeah.
Okay. So they have Snake Plissken goes in trying to rescue the president because Air Force One crashed inside the wall. And he finally finds, apparently the president was wearing like a tracker wrist a bracelet, which it was filmed in like 1979. So the tracker thing is like the size of a small screen TV with, you know, these bright red digital numbers. Anyway, he finally finds, he has a device that helps him track down where that is. He finally gets there, and there's a over in the corner is a guy being beaten up who's wearing the bracelet. And he fights off the guy who's beating him up, and it turns out just an old hobo who's just sitting there, and he looks at him and he says, "I knew I was the president when I wore this bracelet. I knew I was the president. Yes, sir, I'm the president." And that's the way I feel Joe Biden is.
Yeah. It's bad.
I knew I was president when they gave me the Oval Office. That's when I knew I was president. That's what it feels like.
Yeah. He also said in a nice speech that had, you know, bragging about what he's done at the border. And it's all, nobody believes what he's saying anymore. He's just, let him go on his way.
I don't get it. So what's going to happen in the next few days? A lot is on tap. Trump gets sworn in next Monday. I've got one article. Let me look through my stack here real quick. He says he's coming in with upwards of 100 executive orders on day one. No kidding. Story here on Red State. Trump will be inaugurated as the nation's 47th president on January 20th. Reports indicate he plans to arrive at the Oval Office armed with over 100 executive orders dealing with border and energy security. He met with Republican senators Wednesday, talked about his plans, and some of the participants are revealing what he said. So one of those, Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, said that, yeah, Trump told us in our meeting, 100 executive orders to address these issues. Things that are going to be massive executive authorities on how to tackle the border, immigration. Social media post on Monday, Trump indicated he will also terminate many of Biden's executive orders. And so you look at that and go, what can the executive do without legislation? Well, there's quite a few things. Policy is set. Tariffs are put in place by the executive. I mean, he's already doing stuff. He's not even in office yet. But I look forward to Tom Homan just taking the reins of the border and just going, woo, and just like cracking the whip. But Trump also said, we're not going to accept anymore. Actually, this is Stephen Miller, his deputy chief of staff, said we're not going to accept anymore that the Defense Department doesn't have a right to help secure the border. I understand posse comitatus. I am an attorney, and I'm also, oh, by the way, for those who don't know, in Chattanooga, a retired 06, a colonel, with tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. I understand the use of U.S. troops on U.S. soil. I understand that. But in cases of national emergency, in the threat to life, limb, and property, the use of U.S. troops can be used. Think about it. There have been any number of times. I was out in Montana years ago for some training, and the 101st Airborne was sent out to help fight brush fires that were burning like two-thirds of the state. I can think to, you know, the desegregation of schools when, you know, Governor Wallace stood in the door. And then, you know, the National Guard gets called out. But then there was also federal troops that were called out in Arkansas because they didn't trust the governor to actually call out his National Guard to make sure that desegregation went well. All that to say, I do believe you're going to see some executive orders that will employ the U.S. military for things like deportation, border security, helping staff up secure checkpoints, the use of drones, surveillance systems, ISR capability, all of that. All of that, I think, is going to be available, and I think you're going to see it sooner than later. They don't have, and the Customs and Border Patrol can then be released to actually do their jobs as opposed to processing people. Hopefully, too, we're going to have a lot fewer people to process. One of the other things happening in the next few days is the confirmations are already starting for his appointees. So the nominations that Trump has made for the appointments to his cabinet, those kick off as of tomorrow, I believe. Yeah, tomorrow. Got a piece here from Fox. Dateline today, actually. Republicans will begin holding confirmation hearings this week for more than a dozen of the high-profile administration picks for President-elect Trump's next term. So right now, what we know is that Pete Hegseth goes before the Senate Armed Services Committee tomorrow at 9:30. We're hearing he has the votes. That's good. He'd better. Senator Marco Rubio for Secretary of State, he'll be going before the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations tomorrow at 10 a.m. We've got the Governor Kristi Noem is going to go before the Homeland Security Governmental Affairs Committee on Wednesday at 9 a.m. We got also Tuesday, tomorrow, Secretary of Veterans Affairs Doug Collins out of Georgia is going to be having his hearing. North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum is going to be Secretary of the Interior. He's got his on tomorrow, I believe. Pam Bondi for Attorney General. And John Ratcliffe for Central Intelligence Agency, and Russell Voigt for the Office of Management and Budget, and Sean Duffy for Secretary of Transportation, and Chris Wright for all of them. All of those have their hearings, their committee hearings on Wednesday. So the way the process works, if you don't know, is these confirmations have to go through a related committee in the U.S. Senate, which will vet them, and, you know, some will rail against them. I like the fact that Trump's nominees are already, they're already announced. We're not coming into the final days trying to figure out who he's going to appoint to this, that, or the other. And I guarantee you he's got a couple of backup plans, but for the most part, I think you're going to see the majority, if not all of these, get confirmed. So they will go through committee. The committee then reports out to the broader Senate. The Senate majority leader will then bring them to the floor for a confirmations vote. Democrats will have their say. They'll try and filibuster. They won't be able to. I think the majority of these are going to get passed mostly on a party line vote, and there'll be a few bipartisans. I mean, I have a hard time believing that, like, Pam Bondi is not going to be able to get bipartisan support. I mean, how many glass ceilings do they need from us before we can get bipartisan?
Yeah, but you're not going to get any bipartisan from any of the votes with Democrats. I mean, maybe some, but as a whole, you're going to see them, quote, making a stand. We're standing against Trump. We're not going to vote for any of it, you know. But also, I'll say I think it's fitting that Hegseth's the first one because it gives Republicans an opportunity to set the tone, because he was the most controversial and the most fought at, like, against nomination, even with some Republicans. So if Republicans can pass that one, which I think they will, I think that sets the tone from the Republican side of, you know, we're not going to do anything to get in Trump's way. Like, we're going to help him pass his agenda. So I hope the first one with Hegseth getting passed sets the tone for the rest.
I think I agree with that. And I think that also the other thing is, by setting them all this week and a lot of them at the same time, like, there's going to be committee hearings going on up and down the hallways, if you know what I'm saying, all at one time. That prevents the press from being able to capitalize on any one particular moment. And the press is going to be all spread out. At the same time, the liberal press. And at the same time, that also keeps the Democrats hopping. And they can't be grandstanding forever on one nominee holding up all the others by grandstanding over here. They're spread out. So, and they're all going on at the same time. So I think that's cool. Let's go ahead and take a break. We'll do it right now. We'll take a break. We'll come right back. I've got more on Dipper number one, the changing of the guard. And then don't forget, coming up top of the hour, U.S. Senator Katie Britt to talk about it more. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, pulling pins on truth grenades in here. That's what we're doing. Text lines. Jerry from Decatur says, if I was a left-wing liberal, I'd move to Europe. At least their forests are clean from deadness. Airborne. Wow. Yeah. Well, you know what? That's just from California, though. Luann from Huntsville says, Snake Plissken, I thought he was dead. That's a line from the movie, by the way. They said that to him over and over again. Snake Plissken, I heard you were dead.
Guess I got another movie to my list.
I hope this list is getting followed up on.
It will. I'll find a day to
see. Have you seen Braveheart?
No, I haven't yet.
What?
No.
JP Watt.
I just got to sit down one weekend.
As soon as football season's over, you got your work cut out for you.
I got time, yeah.
Brian from Huntsville checking in saying, Kurt Russell as Snake, awesome. Also the Jungle Boy from Gilligan's Island. Was he the Jungle Boy from Gilligan's Island? I did not recall that.
I guess he was.
Oh, man. Aunt Sister from Huntsville, Alabama, checking in, says, anyway, about the drones, did they just stop? Are they still strafing the Northeast? The media doesn't care. I don't know. I haven't heard anything new about the drones. They backed off on the drones.
I think they've stopped the drones, at least.
Yeah. We don't know why they've stopped. We just know we're not seeing them anymore. I think social media would be taking care of that for us if they were. Mm-hmm. Ed, except for the one that some goofball was flying in the fire zone and flew right into one of the fire planes.
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't do that. And then Ed P. from Huntsville sending me a YouTube link, and you know I can't look at it right now because I'm on the air, Ed P. Anyway, we'll come back to that. Back to the changing of the guard. One of the things that I am very much looking forward to is, what's Trump going to do about the Jan 6 convictees? Because that was a kangaroo court, man. Especially when you consider that now we know for a fact that the Jan 6 commission withheld evidence. As an attorney, I can tell you that if you don't turn over evidence that is exculpatory in nature, that it's a reversible error. If you withheld things that could have gone to the defense's credit or effort to defend, then you are committing reversible error. Well, Trump's going to take care of a lot of these. Vice President-elect, according to Daily Caller, Dateline yesterday, Vice President-elect J.D. Vance says Sunday on Fox News that the incoming administration's plan for Jane 6 pardons will depend on whether the imprisoned protesters were violent. And I get that. If they committed violent acts, if they were beating on somebody, if they were destroying property intentionally and it's known, I understand. They may have to deal with some consequences. But Biden's Department of Justice prosecuted over 1,200 individuals. 1,200. And I got news. Most of those were being convicted on misdemeanor charges of trespassing. And then they added in a charge that was never designed for this, that clearly should be considered reversible, in my opinion, because it's never been, it was not intended. You can look at the legislative intent when it was passed. The idea they interfered with a government function. No, they didn't. But at the same time, when the Tennessee State Capitol was taken over by protesters, did anybody get arrested and you know, thrown in jail? Did they have a big commission to go ahead and decide who else they can prosecute? Did they withhold evidence? No. Anyway, Trump's going to be, I think he's going to be pardoning quite a few, if not the most of these, but I believe some of the violent ones will remain incarcerated, and that'll be because they were no longer protesting. They were rioters. But there was no insurrection. So hear it from me right here on Right Side Radio. I don't agree with the narrative the left has portrayed that was an insurrection. All right, we're taking a break. We're coming right back. We're still in the changing of the guard. I got plenty more in my stack, and we also got U.S. Senator Katie Britt, followed by Congressman Gary Palmer. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And the Southeast syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two on a Meatloaf Monday. So we're still in Dipper number one. I'm calling it the changing of the guard. We have a whole lot before us, even this week before Trump gets sworn in next week. The events of this week alone, just on the confirmations, are going to be pretty full, pretty robust. But the policy formation is underway, and the implementation thereof is already being planned, and the executive orders. But y'all, the amount of work that still has to be done, though, by the other branch of government. Oh, by the way, the Congress has work to do. And we've got the Trump agenda. They're talking about whether it's going to be in a reconciliation bill or whether it's going to be spread out over several. They've also got the confirmations of his appointees to the U.S. Senate. And then we've also got some legislation that's still moving because there are other things that are part of what I might call the Trump agenda, but are the agendas that are driven by members of the body, not the least of which is our own U.S. Senator Katie Britt. So U.S. Senator Katie Britt, oh, by the way, a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, also a member of the Senate Appropriations Committee, among others. And she has also really been named as the deputy whip for the Republican caucus up in the Senate. And she's on the line right now. Senator Britt, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Bill. Thank you so much for letting me join you and for that introduction. It's always good to be with you and in front of your listeners. I have to ask, what is Meatloaf Monday?
Well, we talk about food around here a lot, and somehow or another, that one has had a good ring to it. So
I like it.
One of the Meat and Three restaurants down the road from the studio does Meatloaf Monday, and we decided to grab that and make it our mantra on Mondays.
I am here for it. I am here for it. I talked with the woman next to me all the way up here about different restaurants in Alabama that we love. So I'm going to have to find out what that is and go visit.
All right, Pruitt's Barbecue in Gadsden, Meatloaf Monday. We'll take you there one day.
All right, well, sounds good. I look forward to it.
Hey, let me. I want to dive in on several things, but mainly, I guess what I want to talk with you about today is the Lake and Riley Act and the confirmations process for Trump's nominations. Let's take our pick here. Let's go Lake and Riley first. I mean that bill you've got seems to be moving in a bipartisan fashion. And tell us what you got.
Yeah, look, Phil, I am really excited about the momentum that's building behind Lake and Riley. I am excited about what's possible for our country. I think what you are seeing is Democrats are finally understanding they have one choice, and that is they have to decide between whether they continue their open border policies or whether they put the safety and security of Americans first. And so it was excited to roll it back out last week. As you know, it passed the House last year with 37 votes. It came back again and passed this Congress with 48 votes. Actually, our entire Alabama delegation voted for it, so Democrat and Republican, so that was an exciting moment. As we continued to move forward on that, I was very excited to have my good friend John Fetterman co-sponsor the Lake and Riley Act and come out, be the very first Democrat willing to stand with us here in the Senate. After that, obviously, we pulled in Ruben Gallego as a actual co-sponsor of the bill. And if you're doing the math, there are 53 Republicans when we are all here and ready to go, which we hope that'll be the case this week, with Jim Justice being sworn in this week. Additionally, J.D. Vance's replacement, the new senator from Ohio, should be named and sworn in this week before we take the next 60-vote threshold vote. So we're excited about that, but that puts us at 53. John Fetterman and Ruben Gallego put it at 55. We have got to get to 60, and I think that the momentum, what I am hearing, the conversations I'm having with my colleagues, I am calling Democrats, I am talking to Democrats, I am saying now is the time to act, now is the time to save America's children, and now is the time to actually get things done. And I have been thrilled by both the support and the momentum this bill continues to gain.
Well, you're it's kind of funny. You got appointed as deputy whip like in the last week, and you're whipping your own bill right off the bat. I mean, like, you didn't even slow down. You just said, I'm the deputy whip, and you start cracking the whip. That's where it looks like.
That's exactly right. Well, you know, I was honored to be selected to serve in that position, and so I am going to just continue to work diligently for the conference, to work diligently for President Trump to move his agenda forward. I mean, as you know, look, particularly when you think about something like border security, there was no more litigated issue over the last 4 years than that. And so knowing what the American people want and then having an opportunity to be in the position, as you know, I have never been in the majority as a U.S. senator, only having been here one Congress. And so I know that the American people are depending on us to actually have action. I mean, Phil, we've talked and talked and talked. Now we're in charge. We have the House, the Senate,
right,
and within the next week, we will have the White House. Praise be to God. And so now we got to go get something done. And so I am working those votes. I am working through issues with people, explaining the impact of the bill, and excited about what's possible.
Well, I am too. And real quickly, that particular bill, of course, named for Lakin Riley, the young lady who was murdered by an illegal immigrant in Georgia, And the bill does a couple of things. I mean, it has a deportation piece built into it, if I'm not mistaken, but it also allows states to sue the Department of Homeland Security. Am I right?
You are correct, Phil. So first off, what it does is if an illegal alien is convicted of or is charged with, arrested for, convicted of a theft-related crime, it allows for, you know, detention of that migrant.
Okay.
And what you see is it does not take away a migrant's or, you know, illegal aliens due process. You know, if they have an immigration status proceeding that's moving forward, if they're in their criminal proceeding, that is allowed to move forward. But what it does do is it takes them off the street. And if this bill had been law, Lakin Riley would still be alive. When it comes to what the states can do, it actually gives the states standing to push back when the Department of Homeland Security, Phil, is not enforcing immigration law. And so you've seen this time and time again. When we know what the federal government should be doing, when we know what Secretary Mayorkas should be doing, and they're not, this allows states to actually force the issue there, and I think it could make a world of difference.
I agree, and by the way, I said deportation, I meant detention, so thank you for clarifying that. But so the reality is, what we're not going to do is have a criminal illegal alien. We're going to just running the streets and you know, catch and release again and again. Basically, they'll be detained, and that's just the way it's going to be as an act of Congress. But then I love
right,
the idea of the AGs being able to bring redress on behalf of their state citizen. That's great.
Yeah. And so, Phil, when you think about what you just said, when you committed a crime, I was getting asked about this yesterday, was on CNN's Jake Tapper's State of the Union, and he said something about this. I said, Jake, if you don't commit a crime, this doesn't apply to you.
That's right.
So, I mean, let's start there. You don't have to worry about it if you don't go commit a crime. But, you know, the numbers that were released from ICE said there are about 66,000, migrants that have come here illegally and then have actually committed a theft-related crime. And of those, 59,000 of those have been given their final orders of removal, which means that out of the 11 million people that are here illegally, out of the 7.8 million that are actually in removal proceedings, the 1.4 million who we have given their due process and we say, you have to leave, out of that, 59,000 out of the 66 that have committed these crimes have been given their final order of removal. They shouldn't be here anyway. And so what we're saying is if you commit a crime, you go to the front of the line when it comes to detention and deportation.
Yeah, I love that. And oh, by the way, detaining them, not just letting them sort of bail out, if you will. I mean, they are a flight risk. The fact that they came here legally indicates that they're willing to be someone who traverses and tries to run from things or run to things. So they are absolutely someone that needs to be detained so the full system can be brought to bear. Hey, listen, Senator, thank you for that, by the way. And I look forward to seeing that thing track. And I believe you already passed a procedural hurdle on this, didn't you?
We sure did. We passed our first large hurdle, the 60-vote threshold. We got 84 votes for it, 9 votes against it. Today we'll have a motion to proceed. That's at a 50-vote threshold. Then the next big vote, we will have some amendments most likely between next and the next big vote, which will be the last 60-vote threshold. And then there'll be another vote at a 50-vote threshold. So we've still got a lot of work in front of us. But what I want the people of Alabama and this country to know is I am diligently working to move this forward and to make sure that it is on a path to be on President Trump's desk on the day he is sworn in. I mean, how good will that feel to know that we are actually doing things that matter, that, you know, that will keep our communities, that can keep our children safe, and that start to change the dynamic of what it means to come here illegally and commit crimes against American citizens. There are repercussions for that, and this will be a big moment.
Well, by the way, just so you know, too, today is the first day that we are live on the air in Chattanooga, Tennessee. So you're speaking to two states. So that's all.
Well,
actually,
Chattanooga
states.
Has two wonderful senators, U.S. senators representing them, and Bill Hagerty and Marsha Blackburn.
Yeah.
They are both fierce champions, not only of this bill, but on all the issues that matter, and certainly great partners. And it is a privilege to work with both of them.
Well, and I'm sure that that is the case. I'm actually fans of them from a distance, but hopefully we'll have them on the show sometime.
We'll have to get them
future.
On the show.
Absolutely.
We'll work on that. I'll say something to both of them, Phil.
Oh, thank you. Awesome. Great. And I appreciate that. And hey, listen, Senator, with about maybe 2.5 minutes left, confirmations start tomorrow. And I'm sure you're going to be sitting on some committee or another is going to have somebody come through it. But what are you thinking right now? What are we going to see all of them get through? Is there anybody who's still hung up on votes? Where are we looking right now with the confirmations process?
Yeah, look, we are excited. I think you can feel it in the conference. President Trump came and met with us last week. It was an exciting meeting because, you know, as I told you, kind of the dynamic shifted last summer when he came and met with all of us. You could feel a unity that I have not had an opportunity to feel as a Republican senator. That continued in that meeting last week. We talked about what we needed to get done. And the very first thing we know we need to do is get his people in place that can help execute his vision. And execute what is in front of us and what we need to do. So I feel good about this. I'll be for the very time on the Senate Judiciary Committee. I will be, you know, have Pam Bondi in front of me there in the Judiciary Committee. We've got a number of important ones moving forward. I think the Republican Conference writ large understands that we've got to get people in there that are willing to shake things up. Business as usual is not working. Business as usual is not what the American people voted for. They voted for transformational leaders that understand that we have got a window of time to take our country back. And so you're going to see that in these hearings. I have been so impressed with everyone that I've had an opportunity to meet with, every nominee. We've talked about their vision, how they'll execute President Trump's plan. And we've also had an opportunity to talk about Alabama. I mean, for instance, when, you know, I had Pete Hegseth come in, we talked about how important it is to have Space Command in Huntsville, Alabama,
yeah.
Its rightful home.
Yeah.
You know, we won fair and square. There's a reason for it because Huntsville is the best location, Redstone Arsenal, for national security and to keep our country safe and to keep our prominence across the globe. But we talk about a number of issues when the EPA administrator came in, or, you know, soon to be EPA administrator, you know, talking about some of the things that have been impediments to our farm families. We know that they're the best stewards of their land and resources of anyone out there, and making sure that can continue to be the case, you know, by rolling back of that. Some of those things, some of the issues we've had with a number of things in the state. Each and every person who comes and talks to us had the secretary, soon to be Secretary of Education, Linda McMahon in here, the nominee for that, talked about school choice, talked about how critically important it is, talked about the steps that Alabama has made in that area and ways we can work together to continue to improve that across the country. So over and over and over again, they have just been exceptional meetings. They've been very transparent, Phil. I take my Article 2, Section 2 duties very, I hold that in the place that it needs to, which means I have to take this serious. I have to ask tough questions. I have to push and make sure that I get the answers the American people and the president need. And they, each of them, have been transparent, and I have been very pleased with the answers I've received. And so I'm excited about getting this cabinet confirmed. I'm sure the Democrats will bring their best game, but these are good quality individuals who I hope we can get in there quickly and they can get to work.
Senator, as we part ways here, I don't know the answer to this. Is it a simple majority on the floor for confirmations? Is that what we need?
It is. Okay. As you know, things have kind of, they call it going nuclear and have busted the filibuster. Started with Harry Reid and then continued. And so, yes, nominees are just at a 50 vote threshold. So that'll be what we're working with. So we've got 53 Republicans. So technically we could lose three because we have J.D. Vance. We could lose three on any nominee. There are several nominees. John Fetterman and I were on Brett Baer last week on Common Ground to talk about the Lakin Riley Act. And in that interview, John leaned into several of the nominees that he plans on voting for already. I've had several of my other colleagues on the floor as I've been, working some of these nominees. They've asked me, kind of given me a list of people, and I've been talking to them diligently about trying to kind of garner a bigger bipartisan coalition for some of these nominees. So I think some of them will sail through. There will be others that will have a little bit more of a challenging dynamic. The things you're reading in, obviously in the paper and otherwise, but I do think truly the Republican conference is committed to giving this their very best their best to get these people across the finish line.
And Senator, I hate it, but I'm going to have to go to break now. But thank you so much for your time today. We look forward to what's happening. I'll be up at the inaugural next week. Maybe Charlene and I'll see you. But we appreciate your time and what you're doing.
Absolutely. We'd love to see you. Hey, and good to obviously be in front of the people of Alabama, and welcome to the people from Chattanooga.
Absolutely. Thanks, Senator. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's U.S. Senator Katie Britton. Boy, we ran long, so we're gonna cram in a quick break, come right back, and probably cram in another one right after that. But then Congressman Gary Palmer coming. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Man, dropping truth bombs everywhere. So several text messages. Junebug from Hartsville checked in. She said, I never realized that Meatloaf Monday originated with Pruitt's Barbecue in Gadsden. She said, almost every time I'm working in Gadsden, I stop by Pruitt's for terrific barbecue. I guess I got a visit on a Monday now to try the meatloaf. Love your show. Thanks for all you do. Thank you, Junebug. Appreciate you.
Now I got to get them to sponsor it.
We do. Get them to sponsor Meatloaf Monday.
Yeah.
Well, what was the one we were talking about doing, Tater Tuesdays? We were willing to throw away Taco Tuesday if anybody knew Lawler's Barbecue that would want to advertise with us, because they do a Tater Tuesday with a barbecue stuffed tater.
I love Lawler's. Lawler's is awesome.
Brian from Decatur checked in. He said, sir, do you believe that any Democratic actor over the last 4 years will suffer any criminal or monetary civil penalties by the Republicans in the next 4 years through investigations? And personally, I don't think anyone's going to get disciplined or in any substantial way. There's a fine line there. There's some people that need to be called out hard, like Swalwell and Schiff. But I think we're going to have trouble getting criminal element attached to it because they have substantive immunity for their jobs. But some of them need it, Schiff especially. Thomas Mathen says, Kurt Russell is covert ops agent, the cult classic Escape from New York. Just saw him on another covert ops leader in F9, The Fast Saga, with incredible auto wrecks and chases. Okay, there you go. And then John B. from Arab. I'll read that one when I get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back, covering down on some major ground across the southeast U.S. of A. Huntsville to Chattanooga, Tuscaloosa to Gaston. Big old patches of Georgia and Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. Right Side Radio, here we are. I'm going right now to the phones again. So we just had U.S. Senator Katie Britt on to talk about the Senate machinations. Well, we got a lot of things happening in the House, too. The House most recently passed the Lake and Riley Act that they're now going to work on in the Senate, and that's awesome. It was bipartisan, strong stuff. We've also seen some really strong stuff coming out of the House most recently with the idea of the Trump agenda being on the forefront. And I want to talk to someone who's in the thick of it right now. Congressman Gary Palmer represents the 6th District of Alabama. He's a longtime conservative, founder of the Alabama Policy Institute, serving now in Congress and representing really Alabama and the Southeast quite well. Congressman Gary Palmer, how you doing, sir?
Good, Phil. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome back to the show. I really want to dive in with you, Congressman, if I could. There's been a lot of talk about the Trump agenda, so to speak. But I really believe that it's the Trump agenda by name, but it's really the Republicans' agenda overall. And there's talk about whether it's going to be a one omnibus reconciliation bill all in one, or whether we're going to see this thing spread out over several bills, pros and cons to both tactics. What do you see happening, and where are we going with all this?
Well, as the president says, I think it's going to be one big, beautiful bill, and that's what we're working on right now. Congressman Bruce Westman from Arkansas and I have been tasked with working on outside groups on some of the things that we want to get done in this thing, and particularly on estimating the impact. But I think that we will have one bill, and hopefully we'll have it passed out of the House before April 15th.
Yeah, that would be ideal. I mean, if we get it out of the House, now there's talk about the Senate trying to do their own version. Are they going to try and send you something that we have to reconcile, or what are we looking at here?
Well, typically, whatever we send over, there are changes made, and we have to go through reconciliation on the final product. But I don't know what the Senate's doing. And I would hope that the Senate would work on some other issues that we need to take up alongside the reconciliation bill. But my focus right now is to get the absolute most we can possibly get done in this. And as I spoke to all of them, we had a meeting last Wednesday for all of the Republicans in the House, and I was the last one to speak, and I pointed out to them that no one should look at this as the end of the process. There are a lot of people concerned if they don't get what they want in this reconciliation bill, they won't have enough chance. I said, you should not look at reconciliation as the end. You need to look at it as the beginning. And that's really how I'm going about this. And we'll have another opportunity if we want to do reconciliation again. And literally could do it later this year if we want to do that.
Well, Congressman, the batch of stuff that you're trying to send up 50th would include what? Border security, energy, Trump tax cuts. What all are you looking at the same time?
Well, I don't know that we can lump energy into it, because when it goes to the Senate, this gets kind of complicated. But there's something called the Byrd Rule, that whatever we send over has to comply with the Byrd Rule. And that basically, to simplify it, means it has to have a direct impact on the federal budget. So I think on some of the energy, we could make that case. But I've recommended something else to the White House for dealing with the permitting issues that I think that they're taking under serious consideration. But we're going to do the tax cuts, make cuts permanent. I think we're definitely going to take up the border enforcement part of it and have a pay for on that, which I've also made some recommendations on how to pay for this. I think there's some other issues that we could get into this reconciliation package. I'm looking at a number of expenditures that I honestly don't think the federal government should be making. We're looking at whether or not we can do it in this reconciliation bill, but we're looking at getting the RAINS Act in. I think that is the absolute game changer. And we've been making great progress in reining in the administrative state, started with Supreme Court decision in West Virginia versus EPA, and then the decision that eliminated Chevron deference last summer. And now if we can get the RAINS Act passed, Phil, that is the absolute game changer for reining in the administrative state. And I think there are some other things that we can do dealing with improper payments. We're sending out somewhere between $230 and $240 billion each year in improper payments. And when you're looking at a 10-year window, that's $2.3 to $2.4 trillion,
yeah.
And every nickel of it's borrowed. I mean, we're doing some stuff that's just, I mean, for lack of a better word, it's just flat stupid.
Yeah, you couldn't run a household or a business like this. I mean, the house would go into bankruptcy, the business would shut down. The only place where you're allowed to fail up is in government, typically speaking. But
well, yeah, you got that right. And but I think we're pulling back the covers on everything that we possibly can, because we're at a point now where we've got to reduce our debt to as a percentage of our economy. We've got to rein in the deficit spending. We can't keep borrowing money to fund things that really the private sector ought to take care of, that a lot of the stuff, Phil, we have no business doing to start with. And we got to treat, I think we need to treat every dollar like it was one of our dollars. I can guarantee you that I treat my dollars very seriously on what I spend in my personal spending, and I think we ought to do the same thing with what we spend of other people's money.
Well, I completely agree. I'm excited to see what happens here. There's a lot of talk about how quickly some of this needs to happen. I mean, I think folks think of it in terms of a 4-year window, but the reality is you've got a guaranteed 2-year window. The midterms are always a little dicey for the party in power. Margins are so thin right now in D.C. that this first 2 years is going to be really the crux of what we're able to see happen with the agenda. Am I right?
Well, I really think it's the first 8 to 10 months, because you get into next year and you'll have members facing primaries. It's going to be election season. It's harder to get people to make courageous votes. And I made that case too at another meeting with our members, that C.S. Lewis, to paraphrase C.S. Lewis, courage is the greatest of all virtues, because it validates all other virtues.
Hmm.
You may have the virtue of honesty, but if it's going to cost you something to be honest, do you have the courage to adhere to that virtue, to be honest? And that's what I've told my colleagues. If you want to be a great Congress, you got to realize you don't achieve greatness doing easy things.
There you go.
We're going to have to make some votes that are going to cost us something. But I think if we do, I think if the American public sees that we're doing the right thing and that we have the backbone to get these things done, I think they'll stand with us.
Well, and I agree. And Senator, Congressman, I think we're looking for that. I mean, I think the reality is, and I speak for a lot of right side ruffians who listen to this show in multiple states, we're looking for that right now. There's an anticipation, if you will, about riding the ship of state in many ways. But at the same time, it has to be something that is measurable, that we can look at and go, look, this actually happened. And I think that's the excitement that the American public have with, you know, getting everything going. Let me ask you this. I saw it all the time in Montgomery during my time in the state legislature. A lot of times people come in and they have their own niche. Maybe their background says military or background says fiscal. Is there any particular thing that, because of your own background, that you're most excited about with the agenda on the table right now?
Well, I've been working on a Western Hemisphere alliance as a soft power alternative to China, because we're in a situation right now, Phil, where our reliance on China for critical minerals and rare earth elements, the things that we have to run our economy, to keep our military operational, it's now a national security problem for us. And I've been working on this for about 3 years to advance our ability to mine what we need in terms of these critical minerals and rare earth elements. But more than that, we've got to have facilities to process them and facilities to refine them so that we can turn them into the products we need for microchips, semiconductors, that sort of thing. And then on the energy side, I think we've got an opportunity to absolutely be an energy superpower. But on the bigger picture, looking at these emerging economies in Latin America and Sub-Saharan Africa and looking at how dependent Europe, Europe's in the same boat we're in, Phil, in terms of our dependence on China for these things, and how this thing coming together and people are waking up and realizing that China's not your friend. I'm really excited about what could be an historic change in terms of the geopolitics right now, that it's our best non-confrontational way to deal with China and what they're doing in our own hemisphere in particular.
Well, and I tell you what, yes, on a geopolitical stance, I agree. I think there's been a whole lot of deference given to China by the Biden administration that they didn't deserve. And a whole lot of, I would say, leading from behind. And I look forward to us leading from the front again. Well,
the Biden family was heavily invested in, let me respect that. China was heavily invested in the Biden family.
Yeah.
And so that might explain a lot of what's been going on the last 4 years.
I think sooner or later we're going to find out that somebody in a foreign country had pictures of somebody in the Biden family in a drawer and they were using that as leverage.
Or they gave them $5 million loan with no requirement to pay it back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gave them some jewelry that's worth about $70,000 or $80,000 that one of the Biden family said that got lost in the trash. But we don't need to go there. That's old news, and the main perpetrator got pardoned, and I imagine there'll be some other pardons coming down the pike in the next few days.
Yeah, probably in the next 48 hours.
Could be.
Well, Congressman, we look forward to it. I mean, like, really, with anticipation. It's been a target-rich environment for me to talk about things that weren't going right for the last 4 years, but I look forward to talking forward on what we're going to be seeing and doing, and I appreciate you being in the mix. Thanks for your work for conservative policy for years, and thanks for your time in the Congress.
Well, I always appreciate being on with you, Phil, and congratulations on getting into the Chattanooga market. I hope the people listening in Tennessee realize how much value you're going to bring to the radio waves up there, and you do a great job. I think that audience is going to really appreciate having you up there in that market.
Well, thank you much. That means the world. And Charlene and I will be at the inaugural events next week. Maybe we'll see you around.
Hope to see you.
All right. Take care now. Congressman Gary Palmer, representing the 6th District of Alabama. By the way, he's been in leadership for quite a while now in the arena of policy for the Republican caucus. He knows of what he speaks. All right, we're going to take a break right now. We'll come right back, and we'll just dive on in. I got a few text messages to clean up, and then, yeah, we got Dipper number 2 coming. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. All right. Hey, listen, what is happening out there? Just want you to know that we are live at the AM out of Chattanooga and glad to have them in the red fold. So all you folks in Chattanooga that may be listening for the first time, just know this, Right Side Ruffians is what we call our folks. And if you want to be a Right Side Ruffian, we're proud to have you. If you're a freedom-loving, Second Amendment-toting, gun-toting, patriotic, flag-waving kind of person, then yep, you fit right in. Hey, by the way, there's a text line number here, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. You can text it or call it. That's the number that gets to the show. Here's one more thing, though, that we've been doing for a while now. We have a daily newsletter that goes out by email called the Right Side Report. If you want to get on the Right Side Report, which gives you all the insights about our podcast, latest things happening with the radio show, what's coming up that day before anybody else knows it, all the things that we got going on here at Right Side Media, some of our op-eds that are written and published around the region, then just know this. If you want to get the newsletter, the Right Side Report, all you got to do is with that phone number I gave you a minute ago, text the word newsletter. It's all one word, newsletter. 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Text the word newsletter It'll send you an automated response back letting you sign up. You'll get it every single day, no cost, and we'd love to add you to the fold. So, yeah, newsletter for a Right Side Report every single day. What you got, man?
Also, the live stream of the daily show. Don't know if any of the Chattanoogans who... I said Chattanoogans again. I hope that's the right I hope that's the right term, because if it's not, we look silly. But if they weren't listening earlier, we live stream the show every day. If they want to check it out on YouTube, also on our website, rightsidemedia.org, on X at Sinfield Williams, and then rightside_media, also on Twitch and Rumble. So go check it out. And while you're there, give us a follow. That would help us a lot, so we'd greatly appreciate it.
Good stuff, man. All right. Hey, listen, a couple more things in this wrapping up of the changing of the guard. Two things that I'm really excited about that are happening right now. First of all, you may be interested to know townhall.com reporting that the first DOGE agents have arrived in D.C. DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency, the extra governmental, non-governmental agency that's going to be providing input to the Trump administration, to the Congress. Directed by Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy, they aim to cut over $2 trillion in the federal budget, right? And to do that, they got to have people that are rooting through government, finding waste, finding things to cut, finding excess staffing, all of it. Well, the first batch of them, like 50 of them, are already working out of the SpaceX offices in Washington. And they're looking at hiring up to 100 people. These are not government employees. These are people that are being interviewed for the sole purpose of seeing if they have the mission mindset to jump on in there and help make government more streamlined and efficient. So I'm looking forward to that. The DOGE agents, are they going to have a badge? I think they'll carry a badge.
They need a DOGE
badge. At least a T-shirt.
It can be a badge of the DOGE, the dog, and the coin, you know.
When they start selling T-shirts, we got to make sure we get one.
Yeah. By the way, Gary Palmer is going to be on the DOGE caucus, isn't he?
He is. Yeah, absolutely. Good point. The DOGE caucus includes Gary Palmer, who was just on a moment ago. And then here's the other one. The southern border. Tom Homan. The guy feels like a pit bull, like he's on a chain. Just let him, let the man go. And he said that Trump has given him three priorities: secure the southern border, launch a large-scale deportation program, and locate the 300,000-plus undocumented children who have now gone missing within the United States, which to me is one of the biggest. I mean, that's what I wrote about. My op-ed came out today. 1819news.com has the first run at it every week. And it's called, "What Did You Do with the Children?" And the idea that we have 320,000 children who came across the border unaccompanied, who were just handed off. Oh, you say you're the uncle? Sure, take one. Which one do you want? Which one's yours? Oh, we don't know you from Adam, but we didn't do a DNA test, but you look like you might be related. Who knows? It's just nauseating. 320,000 kids. This is the kind of thing that nations are judged for by future generations. And so I'm looking forward to that being. I'm so glad to hear that in terms of the changing of the guard, that is one of the missions for Tom Homan, the border czar. It's not just securing the border. It's not just deporting them. It's also locating 300,000 precious minors who have just been, like, lost by the Biden administration, which ought to be a class action lawsuit at some point. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. Coming up with some home fries. We'll be right back. Alabama and Tennessee's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live from the Right Side Studios, man. We got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. We got a lot of doings going on here. So there's a thing. Okay, hang on a second. Back up, Phil. Use your words. Within the Right Side family, we have our own way of speaking. I don't know about y'all, but like at my house, ain't nobody ever uses a real name or gets called by their real name. And if you do, you're in trouble. Do they do that at your house? Is like if your mom calls your whole name if you're in trouble when you were growing up?
Yeah. And then the middle name too. That's when you really knew you were
in trouble.
Mine
was like Philip Wayne Williams Jr. I was in big trouble when that happened. Yeah. If the junior came out, woo. there's on right now, in the way that we say and do things around here. I need all of you Chattanoogans. I don't know what to call you. Somebody from Chattanooga needs to square me away. Do I call them Chattanoogans? Do I call them Chattanoogians? Do I call them, I don't know, what else would there be?
I think Chattanoogians is probably good.
Chattanoogians?
But that doesn't sound like, it doesn't come off the tongue correct.
I feel like I'm saying something I shouldn't say.
Yeah.
Anyway, the bottom line is we're glad to have y'all, and we got all kinds of words and things we use around here and recurring segments on the show you're going to get used to, and we're just proud of them. And one of the ones we do is when we start looking around what's happening in our backyard. I spent 8 years in the Alabama State Senate. I became convinced during my time in the state legislature that what happens in your respective state capitals sometimes has more of an impact on what happens in your day-to-day life than anything else. And sometimes the news in your own backyard, because of what a mayor or a council did or a school board did or what's happening with a grassroots effort on yada, 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 that can have more impact on the things that we do and care about and participate in than anything that comes out of D.C. So is D.C. important? Yeah. But you know what? The laws that are passed in your state capital, they determine a lot of times what taxes you pay at the pump. They determine what your sales tax is. They determine whether or not you can get certain kinds of jobs or whether you're going to have economic development. They all what books are being used by your school systems, all of it. So when we do a segment like that, we like to say we're cooking up a batch of what we call home fries. Yeah, cook them up. Just cook them up. Let you folks in Chattanooga need to understand that one of the weird dynamics of politics in Alabama is that we have a recurring zombie bill. Every state's got them, but we have a recurring zombie legislation that just can't be killed. You can drive a stake through its heart, but I'm telling you, it's just going to come and keep coming right back, and it's gambling. So the gambling interests in the state of Alabama have been some of the most corrupt people that have ever been encountered, and that's saying a lot. The idea that once again we're going to be facing it this year after what they tried to do the last few years, I mean, look, I was there for when the bingo trials were going on. They call them the bingo trials because it was people determined to create casinos around pretending they were doing bingo. It was asinine. And we found out that they were paying the staff in the state house to put certain words in the bills that they could then argue in court meant things they needed. Then we've seen bills most recently where Republicans who had always been opposed suddenly were on board, whoop, whoop, because they might get a casino in their backyard and somebody might contribute to their campaign fund. And next thing you know, we've got legislation that is doing everything that Republicans say they don't stand for. Let's pretend for a second the bill's not about gambling, not about, you know, Vegas-style casinos. Let's just pretend that it's about, I don't know, grocery stores. This bill created monopolies by only allowing the government picking winners and losers. So in other words, hey, you're allowed to have one, you're not. I'm not talking about licensure. I'm talking about naming names and embedding them in our state constitution. We're talking about raising taxes. We're talking about growing government. We're talking about non-warranted search and seizure. We're talking about creating new law enforcement with special rights. It went on and on and on. Well, you'd love to believe that they might learn their lesson at one point. Maybe. Just could we please? Apparently not. 1819 News has a piece that came out 2 days ago. State Senator Garland Gudger, who is the new pro tem coming into the Alabama State Senate, The Senate goes into session in about 30 days. He reports that the Alabama legislature may be considering gambling again for the coming session. He also said, though, in a much more encouraging way, that what he expects to see, and by the way, I just said that wrong. It was not Gudger that said that about gambling. It was one of the others that said about gambling. Gudger then came out and said, too, one of the things we will be considering is a state-level immigration bill. Now, that's huge. And that needs to happen. The gambling bill, I've got a piece, the other piece by 1819 News. Jeff Poor, our friend who comes on the show every Wednesday for the Grand Council, he wrote a piece that says that right now all signs point to another gambling push. One of the reasons why we know why, we're starting to see the signals, is like the retirement systems of Alabama, David Bronner, the king from Montgomery. He's been touting it as a way of creating more revenue because we need more revenue. he doesn't talk about the fact that, you know, the legislature keeps having to put $1.7 billion into his retirement fund because the management of it is not going great. But I think that what you're going to see right now is the discussion of gambling coming up, maybe even in a special session by itself. And that just boggles my mind. Gudger, though, talking about this illegal immigration bill, that's huge. So as a state senator, I was proud to be there in 2012? I think it was 2012. We had what was called the Beeson-Hammond Act. And it was the it was one of the first state-level illegal immigration bills in the United States. And it was comprehensive. And if I had to sum it up, all we really said was, hey, federal government, if you won't do it, we'll enforce it for you. And I'd like to say that it all stood up to the legal challenges, but the usual suspects in the legal field went right after it. The ACLU, the Southern Poverty Law Center, any number of others. And they somehow or another, they always managed to get the same judge out of Montgomery. How's that even happen? But yeah, we saw parts of it go down, but many parts of it are still in effect. And the protests in our state capitol were unbelievable. You know, blocking the hallways, you know, screaming and yelling and doxing and doing all the things that they do. Well, now I really believe that we're in a different time. I had one of the other state senators on the show here not long ago, Senator Chris Elliott from down in Baldwin County. And I made the comment, I think that we are in an era right now where a state-level immigration bill should be considered again because the sentiments have changed dramatically. And he agreed. Well, we're looking right now as the possibility of rekindling much of that. And I'm thinking, yay, get her done. Absolutely get her done. Now, let's look at Tennessee for a minute. Tennessee state legislature goes in, I believe tomorrow, actually, January 14th. They do. They reconvene in Nashville at the state capitol on January 14th for the... And by the way, I can say this because I used to be one. The state is safer when we're not having the legislature in session. Just saying. But all that to say, we now have in Tennessee the ability to see some new stuff happening related to school choice especially. School choice and grocery tax repeals are both on the table. Alabama did a great job with that last year. The CHOOSE Act is now the law in Alabama that allows parents and legal guardians to finally have a true choice to do about the education of their child. Tennessee is considering doing something very similar. So they got, 27 Republicans in the Senate, 6 Democrats, and then 75 Republicans in the House, 24 Democrats. So you got a supermajority. Look, here's the thing. If the people of Tennessee want school choice, the Republicans have no ability to see that blocked except by themselves. If it doesn't pass, it's because of Republicans, not because Democrats stood in the way, not because the teachers union bowed up, not because protests, you know, by the usual suspects. And no, if school choice is not passed this year in Tennessee in a comprehensive fashion, it's because of Republicans. Now, that has happened time and again in Alabama, but they finally got it done. I was one of the very first pieces of school choice we ever got passed called the Accountability Act in 2014, I think, 13 or 14. And it was amazing to be there that night. But Tennessee's got some great stuff with the ability to see, you know, community college paid for the first 2 years. But right now, generally speaking, Governor Lee is pushing for a bill that Tennessee lawmakers are looking to go for that expands the state's current school voucher program. And the new one would give perks for public schools, like a $2,000 bonus for public school teachers and things like that. So it includes something there to, you know, make it more palliative to the teachers union. But they're looking at expanding the capabilities of their School Choice Act. And if they don't do it, again, it's only because Republicans didn't want to do it. That's cool. And I think that's sweeping the nation right now, by the way. All right, when we get back from this break, I will tell you that there has been some serious speculation about what is happening with the governor in Alabama. Is she or is she not strong enough to finish out her term? That's debated? That's debated. I'll tell you more about it. Phil Williams Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just saving the world one soundbite at a time. I got a text here from Bob from Madison who just texted in, and this is amazing. He says, Fox News, as fires rage, Newsom and California Democrats spend $50 million attacking Trump. Yeah, that's an amazing story. So I'm talking about home fries right now. We're cooking up a batch of home fries, I like to call it, when we're talking about things that are happening in our state capitals. And listen, here's a classic example of how jacked up a state capital can be. I mean, this is the height of jackassery, if you will. Just say it. Oh, thank you. Thank you. The jackassery sound effect kicking in. JP on the money. So you got out in California right now, the state legislature is in special session. Why? To prepare to Trump-proof their state. What does that even mean? Listen, it costs a lot when you convene a special session of the legislature. And you better have something real going on when you do. And instead, what we got is just posturing and politics and, oh, by the way, sour grapes and Governor Newsom looking feckless and the state legislature. The Speaker of the State House in California was asked the other day, with the state burning like it is right now, why are y'all convening to attack Trump? And he didn't even have good responses to that. He, what good response could there be? Just saying.
He's also going on a Twitter war with Elon Musk, claiming everything about...
Who, Newsom?
Yes. About everything about how fire hydrants are drying up is fake news. It's just not true. And stop politicizing this fire, which, by the way, whenever a politician says it, let's stop politicizing this, it means stop looking about how I'm the cause of
exactly.
All this. You know, it's, yeah. But there was also a report, I don't know if you saw it, well, it was somebody on Twitter saying that their brother who was in Oregon or Washington, they sent, he was part of the fire department, they sent trucks down there, and they're currently held up because they are being emission tested.
Jeez.
And it looks like they won't be released anytime soon to be used.
Do you see how many emissions are going on right now
yeah,
with
exactly.
the smoke? And
yeah.
The,
I think California being on fire contributes more to global warming than a truck.
Listen, if you went down to your state capitol and you saw some of whom makes the laws for your state, you would think, okay. If they can get elected, anybody can.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some folks that just, like my neighbor's house cat, can do a better job passing laws. I mean, there's some really solid, you know, dudes and dudettes in the state capitals doing what they do, and they're important and they're needed. And there's some jackwagons, too. Seriously. Well, so speaking of our state capital, here's one from Alabama. So there's a story right now on AL.com, which is a liberal rag that I rarely turn to, but I saw the headline and I thought I'd grab it. Headline, Mike Kasin, by the way, is a pretty good guy. He's the one who wrote it. Will Alabama elect a political outsider as governor in 2026? Trump's victory makes anything possible. I don't know. I mean, we have right now our current governor is term limited. She will be leaving office, Kay Ivey. Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth is absolutely considered to be a front runner for the possible, you know, ascension to the office. U.S. Senator Tommy Tuberville just surprised the people the other day by declining to say that he wouldn't do it, saying never say never. And basically, he just left his options wide open and sent shockwaves through some people in Montgomery who were like, oh, crap, because his name ID and personal wealth would make that, you know, a very tough race, even if he just wanted to finance his own. And then you've got others like our current ag commissioner is looking at running. But could there be somebody from the outside? I don't know. But the question is, who's on the inside right now? There's a story on 1819 News today that I've been in the mix on, talking about behind the scenes. But Kay Ivey, I've known her for a number of years, and she was sharp as a tack, and she has just... so slowed down. I mean, it's like it's to the point that you wonder, is she okay? Well, she's had several health events lately. She had a collapse event at a and they claimed it was dehydration at a campaign event during the election season, just like in November, just a few months, just like a month and a half ago. There have been other unconfirmed but widely believed events where she may have had a mini stroke or some kind. And yet she's still in office. Well, 1819 News has a story where they got hold of her daily schedule. And for, you know, the vast majority of her time, like 65% of it, her day shuts down at 3 o'clock. The governor of the state, shuts down at 3 o'clock. I had a friend of mine who used to work for Governor Riley. He told me that by the time he got to work in the morning at 7:30, that Riley was already there and had already read 5 newspapers and knew what the briefings were going to be about before they were briefed to him. Kay Ivey right now shuts down her day at 3 o'clock on the majority of her days. And even on the days when she's not, it's mostly like ceremonial functions, ribbon cuttings, and, you know, showing up at the chamber event. Just stuff like that.
When people talk about who's running the country without Joe Biden, is then who's running the state if Kay Ivey's shutting it down at 3 o'clock every day?
The interns and the staff. That's what it feels like. Am I wrong? I don't know. Somebody prove me differently. I'd love to see her get suddenly real engaged in her last year. But right now, the sense is we have a very tired governor, and there's speculation that she might even resign before her term is up. Huh? More of that. Hey, we're coming back with Adventures in Woke World with an update on lab-grown meat. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the southeast U.S. of A. I'm talking about Huntsville over to Chattanooga, Tuscaloosa, over to Gadsden, big old patches of Georgia and Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. We got the text lines are open. You want to text it or call it, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Mark from Tony thinks I should run for office again. Thank you, Mark. I'm going to say thank you very much.
I was going to say, anytime you say governor of Alabama, there's going to be at least one ruffian that wants you to run.
I'm honored. And by the way, I think I'm where I need to be right now. Thank you.
I wouldn't want that job.
That job eats people.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. So here's the deal, especially for all you new folks in Chattanooga. Every once in a while, when I'm getting the show ready early in the morning, resourcing so you don't have to go out and search it out for yourself, I find myself going, look at the wokeness. Holy cow, how much wokeness. I mean, look at all the piles of wokeness. And then I realize what I've got is a vast cornucopia, a plethora, if you will, a charcuterie, a buffet of wokeness. That means it's time for another round of Adventures in Woke World.
Adventures in Woke World.
Yeah. All right, so here's one for you. I mean, some of these, by the way, some of these just are designed to, you know, just to poke fun. They'll make you laugh. They'll make you roll your eyes. Some will make you want to throw your radio across the room. Just saying. Here's one that I look at and think, okay, they finally read the tea leaves. They saw what was up. But I did not know this was happening. So Dateline last Friday, military.com. By the way, if you're out there, if you're a veteran, if you're a military member, if you're someone who's just a fan of the military, understand this. Military.com is not a conservative, agenda-driven news site. I feel like they always find the leftist way of saying things. Anyway, Military.com has a story headline, Woman Drops Transgender Healthcare Case Against the U.S. Military. What? Yes. So the U.S. Here's the bottom line. There's a woman who is unnamed, apparently, for some reason. I don't know why she's unnamed, because usually adults have to disclose themselves. But this woman sued the Department of Defense in the District Court of Portland. Does it not say whether it was Portland, Maine? In late 2022, she was denied coverage for her gender dysphoria. She alleged that the program ruled against her sex gender changes was in some way discriminatory because it only applied to transgenders. Well, I got news. People who don't call themselves transgender don't need sex change therapies. Just saying. I thought that was obvious. But anyway, what's crazy is she and one other female, I assume they're females, I don't know. It's military.com. It could be a dude, and they're referring to her as a female. Hit. Anyway, this person was joined by another person, and they sued TRICARE. They want TRICARE insurance to pay for their sex change operations. The judge originally ruled that, indeed, TRICARE had violated their constitutional rights. Holy crap. If that's not appealable, I don't know what is. So here's what happened. The judge did not enter a final order. As an attorney, I can just tell you, you can't appeal until the judge actually declares it to be the final order. The judge entered a tacit order and then declared that she wanted the parties to go discuss possible relief. In other words, settle the case. Don't make me do it, because I guarantee you the judge knew it was going to be appealed. So she was hoping they would settle it and be done. Well, settlement talks derailed when the House of Representatives said, we're getting involved in this case. I've never seen this happen before, where the House of Representatives decides to jump into a lawsuit. Good for them. They chose to jump into it, and immediately the tone and the tenor of things changed, and the plaintiffs dropped their lawsuit. Can I have some applause for that? That even may be a hallelujah. I don't know yet, but thank you. Thank you very much. It's good news in woke world. Thank you. Here's another one for you, though. Let me ask you a question, JP. Give me your honest opinion on this.
Mm-hmm.
Should someone who's going to be a teacher be required to read and write at a basic level?
I would think so. It might be controversial, but I think if you're going to teach someone else, if you're going to teach somebody else how to read and write, you probably should be able to yourself.
Well, not New Jersey. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy signed into law in June of this year, or this past year actually, a new bill that requires that basic reading, writing, and mathematics tests cannot be applied when people are looking for their certificate of eligibility to be a teacher in the state of New Jersey. Pray tell, why would you think that would be, JP? What would the reasoning be given for this?
Something about how there's a certain group of teachers that aren't there aren't enough teachers of a certain type of person.
Are you saying diversity is not being met because they require people to know how to read, write, and do math?
I think so. That's so probably the reasoning.
You nailed it. So, the law states that, quote, the State Board of Education shall not require a candidate seeking a certificate of eligibility to complete a Commissioner of Education approved test of basic reading, writing, and mathematics, and even including the Praxis core academic skills test and some others. This is unbelievable. So as we try to get school choice launched in like Tennessee and Alabama, as we try to improve the education system and do a better job than what we've got right now, in New Jersey they're saying, well, it's a barrier for recruiting if we require them to prove like they can like read and do math and things.
Well, this is another example of it's kind of stereotypical for them to assume that whoever they want as teachers can't read and write. So, yeah.
This is, that's like jackassery and cacistocracy all rolled into one. So, okay. Real quick one, because I know everybody wants to know about the lab-grown meat. I'm getting there. The lab-grown meat, it's a big deal. There's a famous, so Adventures in Woke World, we look at wokeness. Well, here's a wokeness for you. A famous Minnesota marathon. Apparently, this is a generational marathon. It's been around for a while. It's now offering hundreds of discounted tickets to athletes. Oh, that's great. Not going to cost you as much. But you have to be gay. So the Grandma's Marathon is what they call it in Duluth, Minnesota, is offering 500 discounted tickets to communities of color, athletes with disabilities, non-binary athletes, and LGBTQIA+ athletes. I thought that non-binary was in the LTG. Are they kicked out now? Were they kicked out of the club?
I don't even think they know what's in their club.
But they know they can run a marathon. Just saying.
How are disabled athletes going to run a marathon?
Well, they usually have the group with the wheelchair runners and that kind of thing. There's going to be people that have a special need or some kind, a handicap, disabilities, that still run them or compete in them, mm-hmm, in different categories. But in this case, I don't even, so communities of, basically, if you're a cis white male, you're out of luck. You're paying the full price. Everybody else gets in for a discount. That is the epitome of woke world right there. And I have to look at this and go, I'm not sure they can read the room, but then this is the home of Tim Walz.
Yeah, I was about to say, this is par for the course for a state that Tim Walz is running.
It is.
The one that had tampons in boys' bathrooms.
Yes. Mm. Yes, there was that. So that it does make sense then that the non-binaries get discounted tickets. What does non-binary mean, by the way?
You're neither male nor female.
That's okay.
You're a they.
When you go to relieve yourself, how does it work? That decides. It's not your notions. That's what decides. All right. And yes, those of you in Chattanooga, it's like this all the time on this show. Here's one for you real quick. Axios says that by getting away from fact checkers that we are doing away with like the ability to control the narrative now. The press is not going to be able to control the narrative. Axios. Phil, did you go to Axios? I did. Actually, I went to Red State. Red State talking about Axios. So yeah, you got a situation right now where like Zuckerberg come out recently and says he's doing away with fact checkers. That media is recognizing that the handwriting on the wall is get away from controlling the narrative. Axios does not get that. Axios is like, wait a minute. We can't control the narrative? How do we function? We have to objectively tell the news? Well, that's what you're supposed to be able to do when you're a news interest. Okay. I'm getting down. Here's a story. JP, lab-grown meat. Yeah. So lab-grown meat. I hate even saying that. This is how the zombie apocalypse starts, by the way.
One of the lab-grown meats starts to grow into a zombie.
Yes. And next thing you know, it sweeps across, you know, the world and, like, you know, just raging through people's bodies as people eat lab-grown meat. Next thing you know, they're eating each other. That's just the way this works. I feel certain. I could write a novel on that. It all started with patient zero who ate lab-grown meat. So I got two pieces here. One is from a source called Heatmap, and the other one's called the CBS 12, which is a local news out of Florida. CBS 12, Dateline November 20th, so we're just pretty recent, talks about Thanksgiving. It says many of the tables will include guests who choose not to eat anything that requires killing a living creature. Therefore, we have now lab-grown meat. So here's a thought. If you don't like meat, why do you keep making fake meat?
Yeah, why do you want to taste meat, but you don't like meat?
I need bacon. Can you make some plant bacon? That's not bacon. But I want a ham sandwich, but I don't want it like real ham. I want some fake vegetarian ham. No, it doesn't work like that.
Then you don't want ham?
Yeah. Well, in Florida, just so you know, they have banned it officially. So we are officially looking at the full-on ban of lab-grown meat now in Florida, and I am so glad. Here, like, for instance, this article talks about, and this is where I have a problem. Well, okay, I have a lot of problems with this. But they discuss it as if it's, they call it meat without murder. Where did they think this comes from? This is like from time immemorial. This is the way that people sustain themselves. CBS News, though, sent their I team from CBS 12. They went on down there to a local lab-grown meat place. It's a real poultry, and it's lab-grown in California. And the scientists, here we go, extract cells from a chicken and then grow a fillet of raw chicken meat through a process they call cultivation.
Well, if they're extracting cells from chicken, isn't that harming the chicken?
You know, maybe the chicken volunteered them.
Oh, okay.
All I know is I just picture this Petri dish with this flappy, kind of pasty, kind of slimy thing that grows. And by the way, some of this, they say, is got a perpetual growth capability.
Like cancer?
Like cancer. And you wonder, okay, when I eat the thing, does it stop? Or have I just cultivated it further inside of me? I'm telling you, it's a zombie apocalypse. This is the way it goes. By the way, in the UK, in Great Britain, they approved lab-grown meat in restaurants.
That sounds about right.
It does. So I'm officially a vegetarian. My fish and chips, my fish and chips when I go to England are going to be like not on the table.
Yep. Don't trust any meat in England.
So, lab-grown meat. But just so you know, RFK Jr. is against it. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Make America healthy again. Story here from Heatmap. The first Trump administration sort of dabbled in it. And what we understand is that Elon Musk's brother actually owns a stake in one of the companies that grows lab-grown meat. But RFK Jr. could control the fate of what they like to glowingly refer to as cultivated meat. As he's being nominated for the health secretary, he suggested it's unsafe, it's unnatural. Got that right. It's a corporate science experiment designed to enrich techno-billionaires. And this talks about the fact that this is a really, really bad idea.
You think?
This, yeah. It's just, it's also kind of gross.
You tell me that lab-grown meat's not healthy for you? That's interesting.
What? This, why does, I mean, who looks at this and goes, man, that's tasty?
Yeah, that's.
Did you go down to the butcher and get you a couple of T-bones that were grown in a Petri dish? I mean, I don't get how this works.
I don't either. I don't want to know.
I don't want to know either. So anyway, there you have it. A little bit of adventures in woke world as we wind up day one in Chattanooga, day I don't know how many in Alabama. But you guys, listen, we're taking a break right now. We'll come right back. Got a few text messages to clean up. Text it or call it 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just making common sense like a superpower. About to go to the phones momentarily, but real quick, I'll tell you, John from Huntsville has the daily grades in. Says JP gets an A+ for his awesome sound effect skills. However, today's winner is obviously Phil, hey, with an A++ for giving one of his best performances ever. Congratulations. By the way, I just want to know who JP has winning tonight's game versus Rams versus Vikings in the playoffs. Real quick, who you got?
Vikings.
Vikings. Going Minnesota. And let me go to the phones real quick because our favorite truck driving buddy, Jeff Rowe from Indiana, is on the line. Jeff, how you doing, man?
I've been better. I spent about 2.5, 3, almost 3 hours in Falkville waiting on trailer today. So, yeah, it's I've had better days.
Well, I hope they give you like a comfortable place to, you know, somebody there to give you a pedicure and massage your shoulders and like you just hang out for a while.
Oh, you know it. I'd like to welcome all the new Tennessean, the Chattanoogan Ruffians
that's
we
right.
got on there now.
That's right.
Where you can go stay on the Chattanooga Choo Choo. You can go to Ruby Falls and see Rock City.
That's exactly right. And by the way, I've done those things, and I love Chattanooga. I'm pretty stoked about this. Well, what do you think, man? What do you think about this? By the way, have you eaten any lab grown meat yet?
No, but I think I'm going to have to get some lab grown pickled eggs if the price of eggs keeps going up where it is.
Do you know Charlene and I?
I wonder if they divide.
Charlene and I went to the store after church yesterday. And there were no eggs at all at Publix. No eggs at all. Like, what is going on right now with the eggs?
Yeah, it was like $5 a dozen here just not too long ago in Indiana there. So I thought, man, you know, I'm going to cut back on my pickled eggs.
If you're not getting fried fish from a truck stop and eating jars full of pickled eggs while you drive, you might just, you know, improve your friendships and everything. I'm just saying.
I might lose weight as well. You
know? Well, hey, listen, I hear we got some snow coming again early next week. So maybe you'll get you another day off since Alabama can't handle the snow.
I was going to say, you want me to bring some snow plows down from Indiana where they got 5 or 6 of them fighting for every snowflake that falls. So, yeah, we know how to take care of snow in Indiana.
I know you do, brother. Well, hey, listen, the music's about to kick in. You be safe on the road, and we'll talk to you soon, all right?
Have a good one, Phil.
See you, buddy. Yeah, it's we do have snow coming, and it's just amazing to watch. Dana from Athens says, hey, Phil, you should add the word substitute in there. That ain't meat. You're right. It's a meat substitute. Gary MS from Huntsville says, I look forward to hearing the stats for Chattanooga. I'm sure they'll be receptive as they are in the Huntsville area is. Who wouldn't be? Thank you, Gary MS. I appreciate you. Well, listen, that's wrapping it up on day one Chattanooga, day 1 million, I think, in everywhere else. But all I'm saying is this, you guys. There are more of us than there are of them. God is absolutely still on his throne. Y'all stay in the fight. We'll see you tomorrow.